Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is January 5th, 2017. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, I've been in Montana, in the northwestern Montana wilderness, for 3 weeks, and I'm returning to Hickory Valley tomorrow. This has been an absolutely fantastic place to do an intensive review of 2016 and analysis of what's ahead in 2017. There's nothing like a beautiful snowy winter wonderland to really sit by the big log fire and get your perspective. Anyway, it's so beautiful here. If you haven't spent time here, I strongly recommend you put it on your bucket list. One of my favorite places in the world. The Dr. Joseph P. Farrell Virtual Pipe Organ Crowd Fund. We have some great news, and a message has gone out to our original donors, and then we'll go out to the full Salieri list on Friday. We've had two of our original donors, wonderful couple, have offered a $4,000 match for January, which means if we can raise an additional $4,000 this month, then we will have enough to fund phase one. And I'm really excited to do that because January is Joseph's birthday, and that's always been my goal, to have that done as part of his sort of birthday present. We've already raised $10,000. Thank you so much for your generous help. And now with that $4,000 match, I really am very excited that we have a good chance to fund phase one. And that means he's going to have an organ and he can start practicing, which is good because he just bought the complete set of Box organ sheet music. So you can imagine he's got plenty to practice. It's interesting. You can see Box spreading like a virus throughout our networks. It's remarkable to see it go viral. Our videographer has been playing the Goldberg Variations in the shower for his newborn son. And Chuck McCorkle, my co-sponsor on the crowdfund, has got his cat listening to Bach. So Bach is spreading everywhere. And I've had many subscribers write in. We have a wonderful subscriber who's a professor of music, who's a Bach expert. I'm going to see if I can get him on the Salieri Report this year. Also, our Christmas card was another prayer book again this year, and so we have prayers for 2017. If you'd like a copy, just email, call, or send a self-addressed stamp envelope to our P.O. Box, and we'll send you one back there free. So it's first come, first serve, so if you'd like one, just let us know in whatever form you want, and we'll get one out to you right away. Our theme tonight is Welcome to 2017. Looking back at 2016, I almost feel like saying, let's not do that again. I have a few words to say on the 2016 annual wrap-up, which we're launching tonight with part one of News, Trends, and Stories. Next week will be News, Trends, and Stories part two, and then we will go into the equity overview, which will combine with the first blockbuster chartology from Rambus of the year, and then we'll do our big theme, the global harvest, and our money maps in the last week. So this will roll out throughout January. Last year in our Space Here We Come, his Space Here We Go, our focus was on global 3.0 rising, so where the new economy is going. This year, the focus is the end game in global 2.0. We've been saying for years that it was coming as they moved the assets out and left the liabilities in. Ultimately, we knew the day of reckoning would come. Well, now it's here. That means we're taking a fundamental change in direction. One of the reasons that I invested a much greater time this year in both looking at news, trends, and stories, and then choosing the stories, preparing the links, and then working on scenarios for next year, is because since I've created the annual wrap-up, every year I've said that the very probable scenario for the next year was the slow burn. Well, this year I can't say that. We're coming into an acceleration of the slow burn, and for many people into a serious pressure cooker. And you're going to see thousands of governments or pension funds or companies enter into what I call controlled demolitions of legal and financial obligations. I gave an introduction in one of the sections of the annual wrap-up. Here's what it said, quote, you open up your mail. The first letter says your health insurance premium has been raised by 30%. The phone rings. It's your father. His pension benefits have been cut by 50%. Your parents are going to sell their house. They want to know if they can move in with you while they figure out what to do. Your company is downsizing and is offering you a buyout option, so maybe they can kick in with expenses and help you around the house. Your neighbor stops by. There is a town hall meeting tomorrow night to discuss a plan to raise property taxes by 25% to meet increased municipal obligations and prevent a bond default. Your monthly grocery and utilities bills are up 5% so far this year. Government statistics insist that inflation is running at less than 2%. Welcome to the pressure cooker as the slow burn accelerates. In essence, this is the end game in Global 2.0, and with it, there's a wave of legal and financial control demolitions. The change in administrations is just a piece of this transition. The financial coup d'etat has used the debt growth model, among other mechanisms, to shift trillions of dollars out of existing government accounts and institutions. And now with the debt growth model fundamentally over and the liabilities are coming due, Washington's not going to offer bailouts, and the number of controlled demolitions are going to come, I think, in waves that are going to be, for many of us, unpredictable. I put up on the homepage a link to the Pew Foundation website to a recent section that they published in the fourth quarter last year called Fiscal 50 State Trends and Analysis. And if you look at their data visualization section, one of the things they will show you is the states with the greatest underfunded pension and healthcare benefits. And I would, now that's for the state plans, and it may not inform the municipal plans that most affect you. But I would really encourage you all to look at the underfunded pension and healthcare benefits for your state, because it's those underfunded liabilities that are one of the many that can cause you a big surprise. And if you're moving to a state, I would strongly encourage that you take this into account. And that will provide you with state data. You also need to look at municipal data, because if there are underfunded liabilities in the municipalities, you could find yourself with big increases in taxes and property taxes, and you don't want to get those kinds of surprises. Now, controlled demolitions is what happens to organizations, institutions that can't print money or can't still issue more bonds. There are many governments that can print money or can issue more bonds. They may not do controlled demolitions, but they have lots of reengineering to be done. Probably the biggest question before us that will have the most driving impact on what the future will look like is, can we turn the budgets, particularly in a place like America, from negative return on investment to positive return on investment? This is something I went into in great detail in the Solari report. Is a special report that we made public called Can America Be Great Again with John Rappaport. And John challenged me to explain these concepts in great detail. And one of the things that it leads you into is what an incredible opportunity there is if we can do this. We can certainly ease the pain of many of those controlled demolitions. Another piece I've written, which is part of the annual wrap-up, but we also have it for, open to the public on our homepage, is Who's Who in the Transition. And it talks a little bit about leadership and the different roles that are played in this kind of transition and why it's so unbelievably important that we make every effort to support excellence in leadership. And I kind of divide the behaviors into four profiles. I try to make it simple. So I would encourage you to read it. We did some great graphics. We have four profiles. One is the Titanic Turners, one is the Piggies, one is the Scaredy Cats, and one is the Scorpions, and they're great. Ben Lazzardi of Lazzardi Communication made us some fabulous graphics, so take a look. Needless to say, we have a new administration coming in, and the D.C. and corporate media establishment are really off to a bad start. They've been extremely childish, and it would be funny if it were not so dangerous. We started out with lots of bad behavior coming into the Electoral College and doing recounts. Not to say that there wasn't serious problems with voter integrity on both sides of the aisle. But we see corporate media, the neocons, Clinton factions, and a variety of different parasitic groups really in a dangerous death spiral. Part of their behavior is tremendous fear about the criminal revelations, including pedophilia revelations that may be entailed with the Anthony Weiner laptop, and a variety of materials which WikiLeaks probably has. If you left it to me, I would take every pedophilia videotape in any intelligence agency archives, and I'd put it up on the internet and leave it there for several weeks, in part because I think at this point we just need as a society to face how bad the corruption is. And I think really facing it, I always quote one of my old pastors saying, if we can face it, God can fix it. If we're going to have a real shift in consciousness, I think we just have to face how badly we've let this thing go overboard. The latest effort to diminish and discredit the incoming administration is now what I call the Russian hacking story. The idea is, if you can get it going far enough, if you can get the swarm stirred up enough, you can frame Donald Trump for treason. You may not get him prosecuted for treason, but you can certainly destabilize his presidency, I think, is the hope. As far as I'm concerned, it's a very dangerous game. If you look at the treasonous things that have gone on, I've been tweeting out saying, no, treason is the CIA killing Kennedy. Treason is the CIA bringing drugs into South Central LA. Treason is the CIA falsifying evidence to get us into a $6 trillion war in Iraq. But you're playing a very dangerous game. The problem is you have a large ecosystem full of people who are living on the dole, and their business is war, and they represent some of the factions in the deep state. They don't want to be engineered out of business, but they have to be because they're not productive. And certainly if you look at the dirty tricks we're playing all around the world to keep our system going. I was talking to somebody at dinner at night, and I said, you know, we used to be able to destroy and steal a dollar to get a dollar. Now we're destroying and stealing thousands of dollars to get a dollar. You know, the productivity in the machinery has gone way down. The problem with the hacking accusations of accusing the Russians of hacking the DNC is, first of all, the emails are authentic, and the problem is not that they were hacked. The problem is their content is bad news for the accusers. It just shows you the extent of the corruption of the DNC and of the American political process. And you can talk all you want about where they came from. The reality is they're authentic, and the people screaming about Russia refuse to address the horrible implications of very authentic emails. That's number one. Number two, WikiLeaks, who is the vehicle for both the DNC and the Podesta emails, is very credible. Their sources were not the Russians. They're on the record multiple occasions as to that. And as to the DNC leaks, we have a retired British ambassador on the record as being an intermediary from Americans. Then we have the assassination of one of the staffers at the DNC, which has yet to be explained. There's no evidence from the CIA or the FBI or any of the accusers that really backs up their statement. They're just concepts and allegations. And the latest headline this week is the FBI did not even examine the DNC server, as in it just didn't even bother. You would think, for appearance's sake, that it would bother. So my take on this is the CIA does not want to be downsized. However, Trump has now indicated that he is going to downsize them because, frankly, that's exactly what is needed. So I'm not here to tell you that Trump or the factions he represents are perfect or in alignment with where I would like to see us go. What I do know is they intend to cut a lot of wasteful gravy trains that we cannot afford. The gravy trains that most need cutting are the ones that are doing the screaming. So let them scream on. I don't think it will work. However, they are playing a dangerous game. We saw the president move troops up on through NATO into the Baltic states. Now we have 15 days to the inauguration. The thought that the neocons would start a war on the Russian border seems ludicrous, but frankly, these people are nuts and desperate. It's proof positive that the sooner we start cutting off their money, the sooner they'll learn how to do something productive. My vote has consistently been for the last year to make them all work cleaning rooms for Motel 6 and all the other discount and budget motel chains. And while they're cleaning rooms there, they can compete in essay contests on essays like "What is a deplorable?" So, I now understand why Mao Zedong wanted to send certain classes and groups out to work in the fields out in the provinces. It's really essential that anybody who's not productive to the economy has their money cut off, and I think that's part of what Trump's up to. Money and markets. We have the annual charts up in the web presentation. Make sure as you're listening tonight, in fact, in the web, in the news, trends, and stories to my discussion with Dr. Farrell, that you access the web presentation. It's got some great stuff in it. But we have the news, trends, and stories and all the links up, and then we have the annual financial charts, and it's a great overview of where the markets went last year. So this year, you know, we're now coming into Friday, January 8th. Let me tell you where we are. The U.S. dollar, which started the year at 103, has taken a nosedive. It's down to 101.53, so we're down over a point. Fixed income is off to a good start. Long treasuries, which went up to 20% and gave up all their gains last year, are now, they ended the year almost flat. They're now up 2.39% for the year. And the intermediate treasury ETF up 0.75 point. Corporates up just a little bit more than 0.5 point. And chunk keeps flying. I can't get over it at 0.77% so far this year. Equities. We have the S&P up 1.28%. VGK, the European ETF, up 2.1%. The home builders off to a very strong start, 2%. Germany strong, up 1.77%. The developed world minus North America up 2.63%. China flying at 3.77%. And that's the large caps. The small caps, China, are 2.5%. And then emerging markets up a very strong 3%. They had been very strong. Emerging markets had been very strong last year, up about 18%, and then gave up a lot of that, closing the year up about 8%, not as strong as the U.S. market, who turned out to be the the star performer. The commodities up 0.62%, and silver and gold off to a great start. Silver up 4.3%, and gold up 2.71%, and oil flat. Oil did not close well last year. Well, in the news, of course, the topic is jobs, jobs, jobs. We saw Trump fight for another plant, Ford canceling a $1 billion-plus plant, new plant in Mexico to make small cars, and then announced that they would instead re-engineer into an existing Mexican plant and an existing Michigan plant. To part of what you're seeing in both the Carrier and the Ford deals is Carrier's parent, United Technology, does a tremendous amount of business with the U.S. government. Ford, likewise, does a tremendous amount of business with the military and military personnel. Military buys vehicles, and military personnel all drive cars. So you have Trump and the Trump administration planning to rebuild on a national basis. The military and United Technology and Ford do not want to not participate in that process. So they want to be in good with the new administration. It wouldn't surprise me if the military wants to see more manufacturing in North America for security reasons. So, and part of the challenge the Trump administration or any administration is going to face is part of the productivity challenge is, even if you want to rebuild the military and put it on a much stronger basis, you still have a huge national security state that is out of control and wasteful, and reining them back in is a political problem. We see Trump, you know, giving indications that he wants to rein them back in some, and look at the noise that we're getting. As I said again, I part of the one of the pieces from the annual wrap up is up on the homepage. It's called Who's Who in the Transition. It goes into the leadership issue, and I strongly recommend it to you. Our hero for 2016 in the annual wrap-up is Julian Assange, leader of WikiLeaks. He's been living in an Ecuadorian embassy in London for 4.5 years. The reason he's there is a legal targeting through Sweden by, I believe, by the U.S. government. It's trumped-up charges, I believe. He has worked for years to out certain factions in the U.S. government and the deep state, particularly the neocons. And if you look at what's gone on in the last year, there's been a series of deaths around him, which I believe are assassinations. His lawyer was assassinated as they tried to squeeze him on the Swedish legal case. There was an attempt on his life, or it certainly looks like that, with a cat burglar climbing the walls of the Ecuadorian embassy at 3 o'clock in the morning. And there was one point this fall in early October when he was going to come out with a big leak. And then suddenly, when the time for the announcement came, nothing came out. He had to stand down. I was in the Coast to Coast studio, and George Norrie had asked me to stay and comment on it, and so I stayed around, and then nothing happened. Many people were very disappointed at Assange. At the same time, I've been in a situation where there are threats to the lives of family members and other things. God knows what went on at the time, but it's an indication of the extent of the pressure he was under. If you look at the leaks of email that they made coming into the election, both the Podesta emails and the DNC, they clearly had a very dramatic impact, I believe, on the campaign. And I think one of the things having a very dramatic impact is the implications of Pizzagate and the pedophilia in and around the Clinton Foundation, both pedophilia and money laundering. I think the thing that put the Trump campaign over the top was the New York PD getting a hold of Anthony Weiner's laptop. And if anything, that laptop probably won the election. If you look at the stock markets and the markets, they started to trade the win as soon as NYPD had that laptop and could access it for the Clinton email, or the FBI New York office could access it for the Clinton email investigation. The dirty tricks on Assange have not relented. We saw a CNN commentator the other day accuse Assange of being a pedophile, and not to be deterred, WikiLeaks threatened to sue CNN over the situation. So they've done a remarkable job of fighting back. WikiLeaks is actions over the last year or two have really had a devastating impact on corporate media. One reason is, if you look at the DNC and Podesta emails, they really indicate just tremendous corruption in the corporate media and the sort of the use of media to achieve political ends. But the other thing is, if you look at who's really doing the work of media, it's WikiLeaks and many members of the independent media, and I think the comparison has been very devastating for corporate media. Let's go to the movies. Our movie of the year is Sully, and congratulations to Clint Eastwood and an incredible cast. Sully is a marvelous movie about extraordinary leadership. It's the story of Miracle on the Hudson, when Captain Sully Sullenberger landed his USA air flight, which had lost both engines, on the Hudson in New York City. It's a very inspiring story, both not only of the forced landing in the middle of the Hudson River and all the people who came together to ensure that no one died, but also of the events thereafter. And it's a perfect example that leaders really invent their futures, and that's exactly what we have to do together in 2017. If you haven't seen Sully, it's just a marvelous story and a wonderful movie, and I really encourage you to see it and enjoy it if you haven't. Our interview, of course, tonight with Dr. Farrell is part one of News Trends and Stories. this was a major effort, News Trends and Stories, this year, because, again, we're not just going to slow burn. We're in for some real changes, and I think we are in the end game of how we're going to re-engineer the liabilities in Global 2.0, and it's going to be a very interesting process, not just because of what could happen with pension funds, with insurance companies, with companies doing layoffs, moving, closing, automation, declaring bankruptcy. But at the same time, you're going to combine that with reengineering government investment and expenditures. And there's dramatic variability of what could happen if we do that well versus if we don't. And so we're looking at scenarios for the future 3 to 5 years where literally we could see the Dow at 30,000 or we could see the Dow at 10,000. It's a very wide, wide range. And I'm going to cover the scenarios when we do equity overview in the third week. But the news trends and stories are great background. So part one this week with Dr. Farrell, then part two the following week, and then equity overview, and I'll go through the future scenarios for 2017. I always do them at the beginning of this year for our business plannings, but also for all the investment strategies that we use for 2017, which is why it's such an important and intensive process. It's for all the different things we're going to do in 2017, and as we do it for ourselves, we do it for the subscribers as well. Ask Catherine. We've got a lot of questions and great questions. First of all, I want to thank you for the great links. One of the ones I just have to mention that came in recently was one on the Philly Fizz. Philadelphia has put in a new beverage tax, which is frightening. You literally can go in and buy a pack of something beverage-like and come out with a tax which is greater than the price you paid for the product. It's frightening. Anyway, it's up on the website. But it's an example of the kind of surprises we're going to get from federal, state, and local governments trying to get more revenue and trying to cover liabilities as these underfunded liabilities come due. Dear Catherine, can you share the name of the musical piece that you're using with your reports? I would love to hear the complete version. We use various Bach pieces. Our team has standing instructions that all Bach is good. And if we leave Bach, you can expect to hear Vivaldi and Handel, most likely. I have asked our team to put together a list of all the music they've used on the videos or audios. And I will endeavor to do a commentary because we've gotten several requests from this. And I'm glad you enjoy them. We also, every other week on Friday, well, every week we put up music, but every other week it's classical. So a lot of our favorite composers go up in those. They continue. I'm a Solari member, and yet I find this is a different question. I'm a Solari member, and yet I find that I no longer receive responses to my messages in the last 2 years. Have I offended you in some way? Is the information unhelpful? Make sure when you send a question that you either send it to or CC Ask Catherine at Solari.com or post at the subscriber comments on the website. I think the person asking it was sending it to my email directly. I get more than 1,000 emails a day, and a lot go into junk mail and spam. So, but if you make sure you CC or send it to AskCatherine@Solari.com, the team will roll it up into the script and make sure that I do not miss it. We make every effort to answer every question in Money and Markets each week, or if you post it in the subscriber comments, then I'll respond on the web. But if for any reason your question does not get addressed, please resend and point out that it was not answered. It's very important to me and the Solari team that we get all of your questions answered. And so just make sure that you let us know if it's not getting answered, because we very, very much want to do so. And you can always call customer service if you think you're not getting what you want, because it's very important that you be able to talk to a human if that's what you want to do. So remember, send it to AskCatherine@Solari.com if you want me to answer it in Money and Markets, or post it under subscriber comments if you want me to answer it on the web. Hello, Catherine. I just finished watching Sheriff. I can never pronounce his name. It's the sheriff in Arizona, RPO's live broadcast, or we'll call him Sheriff Joe, live broadcast of his investigation of the Obama birth certificate. Sheriff Joe has been investigating the validity of this document for 5 years. He and his team of forensic scientists have concluded that the certificate posted on the White House website is a forgery. The evidence is compelling and comes from several different unrelated sources. Sheriff Joe says he will submit his findings to Congress for follow-up. In your opinion, what will Congress likely do about this? Am I right believing that if it's true, all Obama appointments, laws, treaties, and regulations will be null and void, or at least rescinded? I expect this to go nowhere. The establishment has too much to defend. How do you explain how this happened? I'm assuming that which the Sheriff Joe evidence is legitimate. I think there's a very good chance that the birth certificate is forged. I always have believed that. I just always thought this would go nowhere in terms of an avenue attack, if you will. So I think the focus will be by the Trump team on turning around the economy, and their focus is going to be on jobs, 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 economy, economy, economy. They're not going to be distracted with this unless they need to use sort of info warfare to remove certain people or get people to play ball. So if they have to play hardball, they will. But if they want to play hardball, I think they have better tools at their disposal. Than the Sheriff Joe's allegations. Also, are you concerned for the safety of the Electoral College representatives? I read that they are being victimized and threatened by the rabid right. I thought their identity was a secret. What can account for the lawless and strident reaction of the disappointed Democrats? Some of my family will not speak to me because I suggested that Trump might not be as bad as they think. I was not concerned for the Electoral College representatives, and I said at the time there was no chance that there would be a problem. There was a lot of noise to soak up and entertain the troops on the Democratic side, not to mention providing paying gigs for them by spreading a lot of money around for them to do all these things. I think to a certain extent the particular people behind this were trying to throw mud up on a wall and see if they could get anything to stick. The goal was to discredit the new administration, and it had no impact. If anything, it discredited the people trying to throw mud up on the wall. They continue, I hope your Christmas is especially wonderful. You're a beacon of light in a confusing and sometimes frightening world. Keep up the good work and know that I'm cheering for you all the way. Looking forward to an exciting, inspiring New Year's. Yes, let's have an inspiring 2017. I just terminated my Facebook account. I cannot abide the idea that Mark Zuckerberg is going to tell me what's fake news and what isn't. Good. You know, if there's one thing that you can do to really help yourself, turn off your TV and delete Facebook and Google from your life. And I say that, I sometimes use the Google search engine, but certainly get Facebook out of your life. Hello, Catherine. I'm a new subscriber, and I'm working to speed up my learning metabolism for this information. I'm at the very beginning of coming clean. I've never been financially literate. Mostly I've been resentful that I have to deal with such a system at all. In the past, my goal has been to live on the edge of empire. Being on the cusp of Gen X and the millennials, I fall into an extremely disillusioned demographic. I never had faith in the system, but recently I'm noticing that there's a very precious baby in that bathwater. I'm reaching clarity that the only antidote for my personal situation and that of our society is responsibility. Yay! That is, recognizing what's going on, looking at it head on, and responding. For the first time in my life, I'm doing better than living paycheck to paycheck. I have $12,000 in high interest credit card debt from using credit cards as emergency funds, and I'm working on consolidating it under a lower interest rate at a credit union and paying it down ASAP. That's great. That's a great step. My question is, I'm relatively new to the Bay Area and do not have much of a network of players I know and trust. I'm aware that you have a number of subscribers in the area, and I would love to make contact with someone familiar with the principles you teach to help me learn about the landscape here, particularly as it relates to local banks and credit unions. Okay, well, we'll try and have lunch in the San Francisco Marin area this year. In the meantime, check out our bank local page, and we have two Solari reports on finding a great local bank, so I would encourage you to take advantage of those. Catherine, in past recordings, I've heard you mention the missing money various U.S. government agencies have reported as such since 1998. If it is not terribly time-consuming, would you send me the total amount the various agencies through which the missing money went? Thank you, advance, for your response. We'll do. I'm going to do a commentary later this month, but there are best summaries at four places that you can find. First, at whereisthemoney.org. We put that up, I think, in about 2002 or 2003. Then we have a page, if you do a search for missing money plus Solari.com, you'll find Solari.com/archive/missing_money. And it's a page, as of, I think, 2004, we tried to put up all the links and all the information. It'll take you up to 2004. Then in the 2013 annual wrap-up, we did a chart. If you do a search for the bailouts on the blog, you'll get a variety of different aggregations of the money handed out in the bailouts. And then if you look at a commentary I did during the election, Crazy Man versus Criminal, we have a series of or links on the money that went missing from DOD last year, which is quite a significant amount, and takes the amount missing from the U.S. government said to be up to about $21 trillion in undocumentable adjustments. I see suggestions of keeping anywhere from 5% to 15% in precious metals as insurance wealth preservation. This depends on the particular view of the person being interviewed or writing the article. I take with many more grains of salt anyone personally involved in the sales business of precious metals. I try to avoid them. I'm trying to help my elderly mother manage a reasonable estate after my dad died this past summer. Fair disclosure, I'm an only child and the money is in a family trust, so I have a personal interest in preserving the wealth while my mom lives out her life happy and worry-free. If she uses it all up, that's okay because she's earned it and deserves it. I know you cannot give personal investment advice, but my question is general in nature. What is the thing used to calculate the percentage of physical precious metals that should be owned? You need to see the post. It's up on the website. You can just do a search or do a general search plus Solari.com. You'll pick it up. It's called What Percentage of My Assets Should I Hold in Precious Metals? And it's absolutely appropriate to the way things look right now. I divide investments in precious metals between core holding and investment holding. What you hold physically is likely to be your core. And the way I would strongly recommend you read the post, but what I say is how much do you want per person in the worst case? How many people do you want to protect in the worst case? And then you need to determine a certain amount you have per person, and that's what your core position is. It's insurance for the worst case. It's not an investment. Then for investment, generally I stick with about 0 to 25, just depending on market timing, relative allocations and net worth, and hedged versus unhedged questions of am I going to do hedged versus unhedged. Generally but whatever you do as an investment, either you need to be sophisticated at that type of investment or precious metals securities or liquid precious metals investment as opposed to the bullion that you keep as a core position. And if you're not, then you need somebody doing it for you. So it's going to depend on what they recommend. And then they go on. But I think then one question about the gold to silver ratio, I wouldn't worry about that right now unless you're doing investments. And if you're not going to be doing those investments as an expert, then I think you're going to want to have somebody managing them for you. So I wouldn't worry about the gold silver ratio for now. When it comes to, I do think there's a reason to be very prudent with your investments right now, particularly if you look at the variability, that we're headed into in possible scenarios. Make sure you check out our first quarter 2016, Where to Stash Your Cash. I would also take a look at a website post we did called Rethinking Diversification. And I think Where to Stash Your Cash and Rethinking Diversification can help you certainly with bank deposits and a variety of sort of ways of keeping things liquid. I'm a great believer in spreading it around, but always keeping it in very high quality custodians or institutions. And then they say, P.S., it was wonderful to meet you and Joseph in Tulsa. Yes, it was. And I really very much this year want to get out on the road and get the opportunity to do more lunches and dinners. This is not a question just to thank you. First of all, I have to say for the past 8 to 10 years, I've been saying if people just canceled their TV subscriptions and read the news, we would all be better off. I first heard you interviewed on Greg Hunter's Watchdog a few months ago. Your interview with him really intrigued me, and I was surprised I had not heard of you. I guess you would say I'd have a minor awakening when Bush passed TARP. Over the past 8 to 10 years, I had a real awakening. It started with helping to create one of the largest Tea Party groups in the Bay Area with my good friend, to fighting Agenda 21 for 3 years in the Bay Area with many courageous people, and then deciding to shut the whole thing down to take a much-needed break from politics to homeschool my kids. Great. Great thing to do, homeschool your kids. I appreciate your reports on the Trump transition and look forward to hearing more as we head into 2017. Have been a proponent of clean food and no TV for quite a while. The local banking is a fantastic idea, and I'm going to work on that in the new year. Thanks again. You've created a fantastic resource, and I wanted you to know just how much I appreciate your courage and honesty. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. Thank you. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you. Then another one, Merry Christmas, Catherine. Just wondering if this is real. And then there's a link to a Giuliani Twitter feed, which I give a 99.9% chance of not being true. So I would say that that is for sure misinformation. Good article that you may not have seen on a NATO auditor general who was shot dead after his unit's Christmas party. His beat was auditing financing of terrorism and money laundering. I think given what's going on in Washington and what's going on in the world, particularly the continuing revelations about Benghazi and ISIS, it looks unbelievably suspicious, not to mention that we're moving special forces up onto the Russian border in the Baltic states, so through NATO. So I think that you're right, very unlikely that this was a suicide, and nobody bothered to make it look so. So you know, what I would say is it sounds like the NATO auditor probably said too much at the Christmas party. But unfortunately, what we've seen in 2016, and I think we're going to continue to see, is that the assassination is a basic tool of statecraft in this environment. In case, Catherine, you're looking for another Salieri Report interview, please see link below. Interesting 20-minute interview with Marcus Chesney, Professor Emeritus of Quantitative Finance and Director of the Institute of Banking and Finance at the University of Zurich. His report, along with others, is listed at the end of the interview. This is an interview on the 9/11 options insider trading, and very good report from this professor at the University of Zurich, and a very good interview by German journalist Lars Schaal. This is focused on the airline options. I believe the biggest insider trading was the long treasury and derivative markets, and that it was quite significant. At the same time, I don't have the resources or mission to dig out that evidence. It's quite a big job. So it's always good to see a serious financial professor looking into this, and I think it was a remarkable thing that he did, and a great service that Lars did in getting the interview. Dear Catherine, season's greetings. It seems that Trump may try to repeal the U.S. estate tax in order to try to attract capital to U.S. If the U.S. estate tax is repealed, is it foreseeable that foreigners may see the U.S. as a favorable company in which to establish their domicile? Yes, it's already happening. A great deal has been done to make the U.S. a very favorable country for wealthy capital. See the recent Business Week article. It was cover story last year as the U.S. is the newest offshore haven. So this is many things are being done. And if Trump does the estate tax, that will be one of many continuing. They continue. Attached is a USCIS summary of the requirements for the E2 non-immigrant investor visa. Basically, the foreigner from a relevant country that has an investment treaty with the U.S. would have to invest at least 50% in a U.S. business or otherwise manage the business in order to qualify for the non-immigrant visa. See requirement 5. Do you happen to know of any viable target businesses for investment? No, I don't. The challenge is you really need to have someone who fits into the business. Because if they're going to invest at least 50%, that's a controlling or control-like position, which means you have to know them, you have to trust them, have to really want them in, or if they're going to be involved in the management. So it's not an easy thing to do, although there's certain businesses like property management or motel management that can be organized to be run that way. You know, you basically split a portfolio into lots of individual LLCs that can operate in that manner. I'm sure as the money flows in, there's going to be more and more businesses organizing to do them, but I don't know them. I'll let you know if I cross their paths. Hi, thanks for all the great information. I have Australian dollars and am considering investing in the U.S. stock market. What are your thoughts on this? And is there a specific fund, company, or product you would recommend? Thanks again and kind regards. I don't make investment recommendations on the Solaria Report. There's strict regulations about that, particularly because I'm an investment advisor. The two things I would say is your choice of investing in U.S. equities is really between indexed or active. So something that's just a broad index of the market or it's actively managed. Historically, approximately one-fifth of active managers outperform the index. So if you're going to get an active manager, you want to make sure you've got one whose historical record is outperforming the index. Outperforming the index is very hard to do in these kinds of markets, certainly if we have a market as we did in 2016. But if you do go active, that gives you the option to be hedged, and hedging against a downside correction is important. The dollar is very high and the stock market is very high, and we are years overdue for a 15 to 30% correction. So you need to make sure you protect against the downside. So either if you go long, you need to be willing to live through dives in the dollar and dives in the stock market, or you need to be in a hedged portfolio, which you can do if you have an active manager. So that's kind of a framework. But I would be careful not to move in something that you weren't going to be willing to live through the highs and lows. You're going to have to let this play. Again, if you look at the scenarios that for the next couple of years, there's tremendous variability as what could happen. As I said, the Dow could be at 30,000 or 10,000, depending on how the governmental pivots go. Dear Catherine, hope you had a wonderful Christmas and New Year's. Question, congratulations on your cameo in The Finders, and thank you to Tracy Luca for letting you post it. This was a well-done movie which did a good job explaining a complicated subject matter. The black soles on the mare's shoes at the end was a clever touch. I'm going to the website but have not been able to find where this movie can be purchased on DVD. Do you know if it will be available to the public? We're going to publish it. We have permission from Luca Films to publish it publicly in February with our interview with Rappaport on pedophilia, where that's going to be the next one up after we finish the annual wrap-up. And so we will put it up publicly then on the website, and you'll be able to access it or point people to it from there on out. And they continue, comment, this fall one of our local farmers wrote us a note thanking us for the support we've given to his farm, which includes veggies, eggs, chickens, his wife's flowers, and wonderful folk concerts in the barn. My note back to him included a short story, which I ended with this paragraph. The reason I tell you this story is simple. From what I can discern, every avenue of escape from what appears to be a pretty corrupt and dismal system goes through the local farmer. Healthy, locally grown food paid for with cash. Farmers market, CSAs, and small local startup businesses. Artists, musicians, and gals who grow flowers also add much-needed beauty and creativity in the health of a community. Touche, I couldn't agree more. I very much enjoyed your food series and was excited to see that your theme this year is the global harvest. Every one of us can do something when it pertains to food. I couldn't agree more. Continued thanks for the great resources, integrity, and sanity you bring to so many topics. Best wish for 2017. Thank you. You're a wonderful subscriber. I'm so thrilled to have you. Dear Catherine, it was about 1 year ago I came across your name and some of your story in a Zero Hedge article. I researched your story and found many fascinating circumstances we have in common. My story is too long for the here and now, plus would detract from the point of today's questions and suggestions. In the past, I've submitted questions to you. Your prompt responses are impressive. So here I go again. Question, are you familiar with the work of John A. Stormer, still alive at 88 years old? He became famous in 64 as the author, None Dare Call It Treason. In 1990, he wrote an updated version, None Dare Call It Treason, 25 years later. I read the original long ago. I didn't know that there had been an update, so I just ordered a copy just to see what the difference was. Suggest, if you have not read either, it would be well worth your time considering Mr. Global versus the Termination of the American Experiment. The updated version includes the original. The footnotes and references are a read in and of themselves. Yes, I bet they are. Anyway, it's ordered, and I should get it in a week or two. Question, are you familiar with the later years work of the late Dr. David R. Hawkins? In short, his later years work was devoted to explaining, expanding, and always possibly bringing the value and meaning of his work on the map of consciousness to those interested. The core of his work proves anyone with a belief in power greater than themselves and mankind could learn to tell truth from falsehood about any subject from the past and up to and including the present moment in time. Nothing about the future. This knowing applies to any person from history as well as persons in the past regarding their level of integrity. Dr. Hawkins' first published work on this subject is Power Versus Force. Prior to his passing, he published several books on the subject and lectured extensively on the subject, a true gift to mankind. For the skeptics who need scientific proof beyond their own proof through simple experiments, there's a book Dr. Hawkins recommends, Mindful University by Henry P. Stapp. From your work, I know you qualify to learn first for yourself and then your audience. Please consider exploring Dr. Hawkins' work. Thank you in advance for reading my post. I have read Power Versus Force, The Hidden Determinants of Human Behavior. I think that was published, the revised edition is August 2013. I see from the listing for his books, he wrote several after that, which I have not read. I must warn you, I literally have more than I think I have some of them in my den. I literally have more than 100 books in my must-read pile and several hundred in the, you know, can-read-at-your-leisure pile. So I confess that I may not be able to read them anytime soon, but I agree his work is marvelous, and I will make sure to keep it in my parking lot because it's clearly something I would enjoy. Hi, Catherine. In your discussion with Joseph P. Farrell on the Trump transition, you said you received word that CIA and DOJ people had gone into shock after listening to the Kemp tapes, as they had no idea how messy the situation in Washington had gotten. I would say not Washington, but at HUD. You commented that when you're pulling money out of a place for years and years and telling the low-level IT bureaucracy to just make it work, that this is exactly the kind of mess you should expect. Are you seriously saying that the CIA or whoever they represent committed financial fraud on a grand scale and had no real coherent plan to cover it up? Yes, absolutely. It's kind of shocking when you go back and talk to some of the intelligence people who were engaged in the fraud. And it's amazing how much of the fraud evolves sort of is a help. We need, you know, we need $100 million. Go get it. And then a lot of sort of creative entrepreneurial people, you know, go engage in a whole bunch of fraud and they get away with it and it works. And but it's remarkable how organic it is and how there really isn't a grand plan and how many things then have to be covered up with force. What's interesting is that the system has complete confidence. Whatever they have to do to control it, they can. Which absolutely proves true, because if you're missing over $50 trillion, it shows you how remarkably easy it is for the system as it is to literally control. Now, remember, if you look at the organized cash flows, they've been going on for hundreds of years, and the black budget has been going on since 1947. So the system has grown and evolved. But I assure you that it's nowhere near as coherent and efficient as you might think it is. But the control is quite amazing. Then you say, is there anything I can read to understand what this low-level IT bureaucracy is and how they operate? That is an excellent question. I think I don't know of any one source that you could read. What I would do is I would read Prouty's books on, like, The Secret Team. It was really written before the IT systems were important, but it shows you how the parallel intelligence system funnels and channels through all the different agencies, you really have a parallel black budget system, some of it behind attorney-client privilege. So part of the parallel is a legal system. Part of the parallel is an IT system. If you read I would suggest reading my article, The Data Beast, and I would also read the story of Promise Software, including Michael Thomas's book, Black Money, which is sort of a fictional representation. And then I would map out the contractors and banks that manage all the databases. I would look at the government not as a bunch of government agencies, but really just as a series of databases. And the question is, who are the private contractors and banks that manage and service and control all that data, and how is it aggregated and applied? I used to make a fuss about trying to get all the contracting budgets made public so we could easily see who was responsible. And at one point, I started to communicate with Congresswoman McKinney and her staff to try and get them to get the General Accounting Office or the different agencies to publish lists of the contracting budgets and who was responsible for the IT and payment systems, because so much of it has now been delegated into private corporate hands. But you can see the McKinney video, both, I think it's on the Missing Money Solari page, but it's also in my Secret Space Program 2014 speech. It's an excellent question, and I wish I knew a one-stop shop that could explain to you how it works, but it's very invisible, it's very quiet, and now it's very privatized. Hello, Catherine. Out of all the many new wonderful learning experiences I had in 2016, listening to your interviews ranks in my top five, sometimes in my top one each week. Thank you so much. Here are two interesting, worthwhile, inspiring books educating us about profound healing properties in food we thought we knew, and sharing deep insights into mystery illnesses. Both books are by Anthony William, a medical medium. His books can infuse readers with clearer visions of and new spiritual connection to the type of foods we often believe we don't have time to eat when we're lousy being good worker robots. That's me speaking from experience anyway. Maybe these books will inspire some of your listeners. The first is Medical Medium, and the second is Life Changing Food. And here's his website, medicalmedium.com. Happy New Year's. Thanks again, a happy reader listener. Well, that's it for today. Lots of questions because we have not done money in markets for 3 weeks. But I really appreciate your questions, and very good questions indeed. In closing, next week, annual wrap-up, News Trends and Stories Part 2 with Dr. Farrell. We covered economics and financial markets, then geopolitics and culture this week. Next week, we'll be covering science and technology, the unanswered questions of 2017, and then inspiration. The following week, Rambus Blockbuster Chartology, I'll combine with my equity overview, which is part of the annual wrap-up, and that's when I'll cover our scenarios for 2017, very important information. January 26th, our annual wrap-up, our big theme, the global harvest and what it means to investors. Food, whether it's the local CSA or your farmer's market or the literally tons and tons of food transporting around the globe. Food is at the heart geopolitically and economically of success in the world that we're in and the world we're going into. It's only going to get more and more important. So I felt it was very important coming into the 2017 that we had a really good, clear picture of the macroeconomics and politics of food and agriculture globally. So until January 12th, when I come back and join you with Dr. Farrell for News Trends and Stories Part 2, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.